This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Well, welcome. Good morning to everybody. It's good to be here. And this is especially a blessing for me in that Selimona, that preparing for today was kind of my way of engaging more actively in Advent. So I appreciate that opportunity. So thank you. I guess I'm going to have to come over here. I was hoping to kind of roam around, but this will work here and kind of work the slides. And I'm not sure our clicker is working. But what I want to share with you is some work by a theologian, John Shea. And we'll talk a little bit more about John in a minute. And what you see on the slide here is it's the cover of a book that he wrote. It's called Beholding the Christmas Miracle All Year Long. And so what I want to do with you here in the minutes that we have is to kind of share some ideas around Christmas going beyond December 25th into the new year and beyond. And I did put a little poster up here, the word behold. I'm going to leave that in front of us, and I'm going to keep trying to come back to that. I've read the Bible, and I've always seen the word behold, and it sounded like it was a pretty important kind of word, so I wasn't quite sure what it meant. I looked it up, and really what it's about, as I understand it, is to remind us. It's kind of like saying, don't forget, don't forget, don't forget, don't forget, pay attention, pay attention. So if you were to see like the old time, like an old time advertisement with a finger that kind of points, you know, hey, don't forget, that's what this is. Don't forget, behold. So we'll keep coming back to that word, behold. It's an important word for us. Here's John Shea. As mentioned, he's a theologian, but he's also a storyteller, and he's written some really neat poetry. And here's a quote that's from his website. When we listen to him or read his writing, we're often in real danger of beginning to see things in a new way or a more profound way, in a more life-giving way. And I have to say that for me, that kind of quote really attracted me. And when I read him, he has a whole series on commentary on the Gospels, the four Gospels, an audiobook. He's written quite a few books. Again, one, this one about Christmas called Starlight. But that idea of life-giving was really attractive to me. And when he says life-giving, what he means is in a pastoral, practical way, how do we kind of break through our mindsets and see things kind of in a new and a clearer way? And so that I found that to be very attractive. And again, being a storyteller. So he tells a story about Saint Anselm, who was a theologian and an abbot being the head of a monastery. And I guess his time was in the 1100s. And as the story goes, St. Anselm was having a problem with his monks. They were experiencing what is called ennui. Oops, let me click to the next slide. Ennui. So they were experiencing boredom and a sense of listlessness and just not feeling kind of engaged in life. And just kind of an overall sense of lack of gratitude, lack of awe, lack of wonder in the world. And so St. Anselm was looking for a way to be able to kind of break them of that ennui. I like saying that word, ennui. That's a neat word. It's French. And so as I was pulling this together, I found another slide. And it's this one. And so that kind of took that sense of ennui for me. It kind of took that sense of ennui from St. Anselm and it kind of made it a little bit personal. And so so the way I read the slide is there's a man, it could be a woman. I was going through this with my wife and we were talking about preparing for this talk and preparing for Christmas season and how it seems to be a rush. And she said, John, that should be a woman in the middle. I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that. But I liked the titles around this picture because it speaks again to kind of the mindsets that I'll make it personal that I get caught in. It's the same old way of doing things. So I get a whole set of assumptions that tell me what I'm supposed to do, how I'm supposed to do it. I've always done it this way. Been there, done that. So there's kind of that lack of a sense of wonder and awe. It's kind of missing. It's almost like we take our God, if you will, in our heads, and we make him or her small. And then it kind of reinforces itself. So now a small God reinforces my behavior. And so what St. Anselm was interested in doing is creating a God, if you will, that is bigger, bigger than we can conceive in our heads, beyond what we might imagine. And so John Shea, in telling his story, makes reference to the prologue of St. John's Gospel. And in the prologue of St. John's Gospel, we read, and I'll read that here, we read about a God who is bigger than we can conceive. So the prologue doesn't start out with our cares and concerns, but it's much, much, much bigger. So let me read just the first couple of pieces of the prologue. And just listen to the words, if you will. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came to be through him, and without him, nothing came to be. What came to be through him was life, and the life is the light of the human race. The light shines in the darkness, and this darkness does not overcome it. So here's a God that existed way before we were here and continues to exist. And if you look at pictures out in the cosmos, God's way out there. So God is everywhere beyond our concept, if you will, beyond what we can think. That's the kind of God that we have. And John Shea, in his comments about this prologue of St. John, prologue meaning kind of an overture, if you will. So kind of the reason that Jesus came and what it means to us is all, if you will, kind of contained in this little summary. But what John Shea talks about is that when we say in the beginning, we tend to think historically, in the beginning. His point is that in the beginning is every moment. There's always a beginning. Every moment of our lives is a beginning. So we are connected, if you will, to this big picture of God. And then there's reference to the Word. And if you think about Word, it's a communication. So we speak words to each other. And that Word that was spoken back then, so to speak, whenever then was, continues to be spoken. And it's in our lives. So we communicate what we are, from our interior out into the exterior. It's the Word. So the Word is living, dynamic. It's not just a historical fact. And then life, life-giving. And when we say life-giving, again, what we're talking about is that it's eternal life, as we might know eternal life theologically. But John Shea also talks about it's life in the sense, life-giving, in the sense of breaking through all those kinds of structures that we see here, all those kinds of structures that could lead to ennui. So it's mindset changes. And that's the invitation that we're giving here and through this prologue from St. John. So in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Whoops, I'm sorry, a slide too far. But as we know, and as we now celebrate here next week, wow, next week, a week from tomorrow. So now that Word comes down to us and becomes flesh and becomes one of us and is incarnated. So made flesh, just like us. So in a very particular time, in a particular place, in a very specific way, that Word is made flesh, and that is Jesus. And so now Jesus is with us. Jesus is with us. So that big picture of the Word now comes down to us and is made, if you will, kind of like us and similar to us, so we can be attracted to him. And now that Word is made flesh, and that's what we celebrate in Christmas. And so St. Anselm was really interested in using that prologue to break that ennui, go beyond our own little humble ways of thinking, go beyond that ennui and think in terms of a broader God who is with us in all ways, even down to the nuts and bolts and the dailiness and the mundaneness of our own daily life, the Word made flesh. John Shea also relates a story from a John Cheever novel. He talks about Reverend Mr. Applegate, who was an Episcopalian priest. And he shares in the story that Reverend Mr. Applegate was going through the throes of a nervous breakdown. And the reason he's going through a nervous breakdown is that he's standing and he is dipping the bread into the wine and offering communion. And he's hearing the voices of the people receiving the communion. And one of the voices says, he says, the body of Christ, one of the voices says, should I have the sausage or the eggs for breakfast? And then the next person comes up and he dips the bread in the wine and he says, body of Christ. And the person says, should I give Margaret the necklace now or wait to graduation? And so what Reverend Mr. Applegate is saying is that, you know, we think big thoughts, but in lots of ways, our lives are just a humble chain of worries and anxieties. And it's not to say that that's right or wrong. That's life, and we live that life, but we miss the opportunity to take that which is offered to us in that invitation of the body and blood of Christ. So I wondered, as I was pulling this together, I wanted to reflect a little bit too on some of the customs and traditions that we have during this time of year and the seasons. And John Shavers, again, kind of relating to what are those kind of customs, traditions that kind of enter us into the season. So getting into the spirit. But I was thinking about these from more maybe of a spiritual, from a spiritual perspective. What are some of the messages that may be embedded in these traditions? So, for example, the Christmas tree, when I was reading in his book, he talks about the evergreen tree is the Christmas tree, and it's evergreen, which means that it never loses its leaves. It's never barren. It's alive all the time. Again, from a symbolic standpoint. And then we always put the angel or a star on top of the tree. And again, in some ways, maybe unconsciously, we're recalling that whole Christmas event Christmas Eve with the angels and the star leading the magi, leading the shepherds. And then Santa Claus, I was thinking about Santa Claus. And I guess what struck me is the whole idea, I have two grandkids who are 8 and 10. So they're still into the Christmas wonder, if you will, of Santa Claus. And so what struck me is that whole sense of awe and wonder at this time of year from a kid's perspective. And then I was thinking from my own perspective, how, if you will, my years laden eyes wants to almost kind of say, well, wait till you get bigger. Wait till you experience life. But it's that whole idea of kind of missing the awe and wonder of life. And that awe and missing that awe and wonder can get in the way, in my experience, can get in the way of gratitude and being thankful. And then Christmas lights. And again, this isn't my house, but it's a nice picture. And that whole sense of an idea of there's darkness. And Thursday night, we'll celebrate the longest night with winter solstice. But there's darkness. And from a symbolic standpoint, the world is a dark place. But we put up Christmas lights and maybe we get into competitions where I live in our little neighborhood. We got a competition to see who's got the nicest decorations. But beyond all that, in some ways, we're inviting, if you will, in a spiritual way, Christ into our homes and by displaying that kind of light, if you will, light in the darkness. So there's a deeper meaning there if we accept that invitation. This is a particularly relevant for me and a favorite of mine, the whole idea of luminarias. So my wife and I lived in Phoenix in Arizona for a while, in El Paso. So this is a kind of a tradition, a Mexican-American Hispanic tradition of kind of lighting the way, if you will, for Joseph and Mary. That's kind of the symbolism of this. And there are candles. This happens to be, it looks like in jars, but typically they're in little paper bags with sand. But the idea is kind of lighting the way for Joseph and Mary. And again, from a spiritual standpoint, we might think of this as kind of lighting the way for the baby Jesus, you know, to kind of come into our hearts. So there's some meaning there from a spiritual perspective. And then I was thinking about Another aspect of getting into spirit, there's the Grinch. In Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew three sizes that day. And so I was just thinking again as a kind of the spirit of Christmas and the spirit of this season, that there's an invitation there, if you will, to let go of the way that we've always thought of things and to open up to new horizons. The spirit of reconciliation, the spirit of coming together, family coming together. And so so there's the Grinch, and there's just a picture of from the Charles Dickens story with Tiny Tim. But again, that whole idea of letting go of isolation and now including others and opening up to the reconciliation with each other and to family. And then another image that came to mind was Elf. I don't want to be a spoiler if you haven't seen the movie. But again, here's a movie that is about family coming together. It's about, again, awe and wonder. Elf's favorite things was just a smile. My favorite is the smile. And so again, just something that's a part of our tradition, if you will, and customs, but something that also leads us into a sense of the spirit of the season. So coming together with family, coming together and sharing, and coming together again with that sense of awe and wonder. So those are just some of the aspects in my mind I was thinking about, and that John Shea was talking about in terms of getting in the spirit of the season. So we get in the spirit, and we're in that place, but at the same time, there's a deeper invitation for us. And I think this is the part where the behold becomes very applicable for us. So here's a picture of Gabriel speaking with Mary. And again, from a John Shea perspective, what he talks about, what he shares, is that Mary really conceived Jesus in her heart before she did in her womb. And that is to say that she had to say yes and cooperate with God, with Gabriel, in order for Jesus to be born. So there's that sense of openness, a sense of trust, a sense of it's not about I'm not worthy. It's just that, yes, I accept. And I will, I say yes, and I will trust, and I will ponder, and I'm available. There's a cooperation aspect there. And the other part of this is that she learns that she is the favored one, that she is a daughter of God. And I guess the deeper invitation, I guess, as I've thought about this, is perhaps we find ourselves kneeling like Mary, accepting and receiving the fact that we too are favored ones. And the fact too that in order to go forward, it requires our yes and our sense of cooperation. So there's a deeper invitation here, and it's a deeper invitation of Christmas that we can carry forward throughout the year. And then here's a picture of Mary and Joseph with baby Jesus and swaddling clothes, and was reflecting on that word swaddling. And I was just, even in the image of just feeling so secure and so loved and so held in that swaddling. And just looking at the tender faces there of Mary and Joseph as they look down at their baby. And again, I reflected on the deeper invitation that we too are held, we're held that same way by God if we accept that invitation. And we too are swaddled, if you will, and held tightly and looked at with those kind of tender eyes. So again, a chance of beholding an opportunity throughout the course of the year. Oops. And then there's the gifts of the Magi, frankincense, myrrh, and gold. And as I understand it, gold was kind of a symbol, of Jesus's kingly, earthly kingdom, if you will, heavenly kingdom. The frankincense was to represent his divinity, and the myrrh was to represent. It's interesting, I hadn't realized this. Myrrh really is kind of embalming material. And so it's kind of a foreshadow, if you will, of the fact that the wood of the manger will become the wood of the cross. And again, as I was reflecting on this, the kind of the deeper invitation is first to recognize that Jesus came and Jesus was with us in all aspects of our humanity. So he, as we know, he suffered, he died, but he also can recognize the gloominess of our lives, that ennui in our lives. He's been through that. He knows what that is. He can walk with us in that. And so there is that invitation in our daily lives to accept the fact that we have a God that knows us, is with us, does not let us go. It's also an acceptance of the fact that those life struggles will be a part of our lives too in the human adventure. But that again, we have a God that can walk with us during those times. And so we have an invitation to accept the invitation, if you will, of Christmas every day of the year. So it's Christmas Day, it's next Monday, but it's every day of the year that we can accept these deeper invitations. And again, I think the key word here is always to behold and to remember that those invitations are there throughout the course of the year and they're offered to us in any kind of a way throughout the course of the year. So that key word, behold. John Che, I think, would say that we are spiritual beings. That's our essence. We're spiritual beings trying to become human, and that's our human adventure. And that's the offer of and the invitation that we're given through through the Christmas miracle, if you will, throughout the course of the year. I want to kind of close my talking, if you will, with a quote from a book called Sadhana, Lesson of the Incarnation, by a Jesuit priest, Anthony de Mello. And he says that we forget all too easily that one of the big lessons of the incarnation is that God is found in the ordinary. So you wish to see God? Look at the face of the man next to you. You want to hear him? Listen to the cry of a baby, the loud laughter at a party, the wind rustling in the trees. You want to feel him? Stretch out your hand and hold someone, or touch the chair that you're sitting on, or the book that you may be reading, or just quiet yourself. Become aware of the sensations in your body, sense his almighty power at work in you, and feel how near he is to you. Emmanuel, God is with us. So, all righty. So, at your place or near to your place, you have a handout. And the handout is a quote, the quote from Anthony de Mello. And on the back of the handout is a statement that says that God comes to you disguised as your life. And that's a statement from Paulo di Arci. And so there are a couple of reflection questions there. And the first one is, where have you experienced the incarnation in your daily life within the past few months? And the request here is to think of it in a specific way. What was the specific situation? Who was the specific person? But where have you seen God in your daily life within the past few months? And then what kind of joy did that little experience bring to you? And it could be very ordinary, very and specific, or something, you know, that was even that had a lot of meaning for you. But I would ask, if you would, just to take a couple of minutes and maybe reflect on that, and then maybe we can have a little discussion. So let me give you a couple minutes just to kind of reflect on that, maybe 2 minutes, and then I'll invite any discussion that anybody might want to have. I'll put you on the spot, but
it was there. Festival, and the family had their Catholic meal on the appropriate night with all the lights and the candles at the door. When you come in, there are candles on the floor. that sort of welcome you in. And the way they sat with their tray of things to celebrate, food, sustenance, beauty, the spirit, and the incense, I felt very close to God. And thinking of the connections, you know, they have the lights, they have a 40-year or 40-day story. You know, the person you don't expect to come back from a long battle arrives. And just thinking of the commonality of our spiritual lives.
Thank you very much for sharing. And we were talking a little bit before we got started, and I think we were talking about that experience. It's kind of in a specific maybe religion or set of beliefs, but it's universal. I mean, if you were to take all the different faiths, if you will, and kind of line them up, you might find 3, 4, 5 universal kinds of truths that kind of cut through all through. So we're not as different as perhaps you might think we are. So thank you. Beautiful sharing. Thank you all. Anyone else? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've gotten in the habit of visiting the church that we attend in South Austin in the mornings. There's a big grove of oak trees. And it's just become kind of a sacred place. It's just a nice place to start in the morning. And I've gotten in the habit of feeding the squirrels. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's to a point now to where I really believe this, that they almost like know my car. Like when I drive up, I have a sense that there's a couple of them that kind of come and they kind of wait. And it's kind of like, I hope he's got his seats today. And then I kind of go, there's a little bench thing and I kind of place them there. And then they kind of look and then they kind of run up. So, but yeah, I've heard it said that nature is God's first Bible. It's the Bible. So beautiful. Yep. Anyone else? Any other sharing? Please.
Walk with the nature, right? And then how difficult sometimes it is to hold on to that elevated sense when you come to the semester chaos at school.
Okay.
Preparations for Christmas, and that we have. So the quote from Danella was particularly powerful, reminding me of those moments that I should sit still and appreciate, or that I don't, that I enjoy in the moment, but I don't hold on to.
Yes.
That happens in the Advent season. So that found that quote very powerful.
Yes. Yeah.
The interventions that happen every day that sometimes we just let pass.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I think to your point, I think the invitation of Christmas is to kind of heighten the awareness of the fact that, like you say, those are there. And that's that kind of change of consciousness. Yep. Anything else anyone want to share? I have a little passage I'd like to read to close. Anything else? Let me then close with a little poem that was shared. This actually, we got this yesterday. This is from a friend, and this is their family newsletter for 2023 that comes with the Christmas card. So it's kind of an update on what's going on and what's happened and milestones in their lives during 2023. But they closed their message here with a little poem that says it's called The Work of Christmas. So when the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among brothers, and to make music in our hearts. So, very much thank you for being here. I want to encourage you to behold, don't forget, behold, and wish each of you a very lovely and a blessed holiday season. So thank you very much. You guys take care. Thank you.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.